This is Dirt and Sprague.
How does a tiger get in the bathroom? He almost killed me.
Hey, bro, you mind putting on some pants? I find it a little weird. I have to ask twice.
Pants at a time like this, I don't have any.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. Oh, 600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Okay, I'm going to get on that. Let's give me a minute.
Joyce is very upset.
Flo, we've discussed this. Mornings are for coffee and contemplation.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, youtube.com/1080TheFan. You can reach the show at the Vancouver Ford text line at 503-864-6326. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at vancouverford.com. Welcome into the program. We are still employed, unlike Dennis Allen.
We are here. We do not get fired after a seventh consecutive loss. Remember when the Saints were 2-0 in the talk of the NFL?
I had listeners telling me, are you going to apologize on the Saints, Sprague?
Remember that?
I remember.
They had a former wide receiver attack their quarterback on social media. That was a whole thing this weekend.
First quarterback to lose to 31 different teams.
That's a wild stat. I didn't see that.
You didn't see that circulating yesterday?
No, I did not see that one flying around.
They lose to the
Good for Bryce Young, man. Good for him. Didn't do much, but good for him. That pick wasn't his fault. That's for damn sure.
Weirdly didn't care about him being happy. I know that sounds so mean. I know he's been through it. I get it.
Absolutely railroaded by David Tepper.
I know. Well, also demand an Eli. Carolina.
I'm happy he got a win. He's not going to win many of those in his career.
That was one.
He got one.
We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the program. If you're just joining the show, we were debating if Penn State should be expected to win any of these big games. Franklin basically says, be happy with your lot in life. And I think Penn State fan is saying, no.
No, we don't want to be happy.
We did not get to the coolest play I've ever seen. Saquon Barkley backwards jumped over a defender.
Never seen that before, and I hope I never see that again because I was terrified watching it. For an injury-riddled running back, like, don't do that ever again.
He did take a big shot in the
back. It was really cool. Please don't do that ever again.
So we didn't get to we didn't talk about that, but there's that. Mike Norvell in Florida State, we were calculating how much it would cost them to go to Deion Sanders because how in God's name, no matter what your situation, do you score 11 points against North Carolina's defense?
They are the worst FBS Power 4 team.
Yep,
they are. Yeah, I know they beat Cal. I don't care about the outcome of that game.
I would pick Cal to beat them again.
They're the worst FBS team.
Yeah.
You give me the bottom of the bottom in every conference, and I would take that bottom to beat Florida State.
You take Purdue to beat Florida State?
I think that I would at this point.
Are you kidding me?
Their coach might get fired, and he may or may not have some nefarious things going on behind the scenes right now. That's been a new internet rumor for
Purdue?
A while. Yeah, there's been some rumors out there about Ryan Walters.
Oh, no.
Things he's doing with co-eds, but I digress. I still think I would take Purdue in that game. I think I would.
You want a full ride?
Oklahoma State, I would take them. Mississippi State, yeah. I'd take them.
Well, they almost lost to UMass. There was some sketchy stuff going
on. Came back and won. Gritty toughness.
They also lost a decommit in the stands.
They did.
Four-star wide receiver decommitted while in the stands.
They were down 10-0 at home to UMass, and he typed out a tweet, and the fan behind him saw it saying, please respect my decision. I'm getting the hell out of here, man.
It's not a good look.
I'm not coming to start. You guys are losing to UMass. I'm not playing here.
By our calculations, Florida State would have to spend $75 million to fire Norvell and poach Deion away.
A little chump change. They'll get it from the Saudis. They're begging for that investment fund money. They're
probably
gonna
have to have a $12.5 million contract for Deion?
Probably in the 9 to 10 range.
9 to 10 range, yeah. At least.
9 to 10.
At least.
It'd be an increase in his current salary.
So you got another $50 million you commit to down the road.
I mean, that's down the road. Kick the can.
Yeah.
Kick the can.
Where's the piff at when you need him, man? They'll help you out.
Oregon went to Ann Arbor and scoreboard wise did exactly what we all thought.
Yeah.
38-17. How about that? That last touchdown by Dan Lanning was pretty wild and wicked.
We'll actually send two receivers out to the right.
Great team's cover. That's what they tell me.
One to the left. James going to get the ball again up the middle and will spin into the end zone.
Oh.
Jordan James.
We're all so happy.
And Oregon a kick away from making it a 38-17 ball game.
Damn right, Jerry.
For all the times that I have gambled on a team and they have not done that, I felt good watching it.
I think you love your coach doing that.
I did. Well, I think there's a logic behind it. He grabbed Sherrone Moore after the game and had a little conversation with him. My guess would be, this is just speculation, Last week, we spent a lot of time talking about there was a tiebreaker scenario out there in which Oregon could get left out of the Big Ten title game being the number one team in the country and undefeated. And that was because if, now this is over, but if Penn State and Indiana would have won out, the tiebreaker that would have mattered would have been the head-to-head point differential against Ohio State.
But he already knew the Penn State outcome.
I'm just saying, you don't know what the rest of the season is going to look like.
I think he's cold-blooded killer.
I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think it was about tiebreaker scenarios. I think he was looking at point differential against Michigan, who will also play Indiana, who will also play Ohio State. I don't know if Penn State plays Michigan this year.
I don't think they play Penn State. I think that's why
he did it. Because we spent last week talking about, hey, you know, there's a scenario out there where you could go undefeated and not make the Big Ten title game. And he said, well, let's just win by 21. That way, if Ohio State or Indiana beats him by 17 and it does come down to a tiebreaker, then that's not a thing.
Yeah, that could be exactly what it was and why he talked to Sharon Moore. I also just like play to the final whistle. They're at the 1 yard line. I no problem.
I hate gambling on teams who get inside the 10 yard line and don't score. It's when you need one more score to cover. Yeah. And for everybody who cashed an Oregon bet this weekend, including Jordan Schulte, I'm happy for you.
Yes. Jordan Schulte texted us that he unloaded the whole account on Oregon minus the 14 and he needed that last touchdown, as did many people.
Yes, he did.
In Vegas. No, but the number one team in the country continues to roll. Dylan Gabriel's numbers look really good. It was an interesting tale of two halves here for Oregon because they came out the gate and they looked every bit the part offensively and defensively against this Michigan team.
They did. That's kind of who they've been all year, man. They've only scored 26 points on the season in the third quarter now. But I think the focus that I want to have on it is not, because it feels like that third quarter stuff is starting to dominate a conversation.
We'll get to that at 7:15.
Like, it's starting to become an own thing.
Yeah.
I prefer to lean on the other side of that stat, and that is now that Oregon is 6-0 in Big Ten play. They have won all six of their conference games. In five of those six games, they have had a three-score lead at halftime. In five of the six, the only one they did not have a three-score lead was Ohio State. Well, obviously, they ended up winning that game. The way that they're coming out of the gate and almost burying teams in the first half is enough for me to overlook anything else. I thought this weekend was a good reminder and example of something that your quarterback can do that he has not had to do very often. And I thought his athleticism, his escapability, his pocket presence, his ability to extend plays, all of that was on full display this weekend for me. You just haven't seen it much. Outside of the first 2 weeks when he was pressured and clearly not aware of where pressures were coming from and taking bad sacks, Ohio State couldn't really lay a finger on him. It wasn't like he was running for his life. Michigan won a lot up front. They forced him out of the pocket a handful of times. His ability to escape, make plays with his legs, you just haven't seen it. And it was a nice reminder for me of like, oh, that's right. That's in there. And then a nice, you know, long touchdown run on a quarterback draw. To me, Dylan Gabriel was the story out of this game. I thought he was phenomenal against what is a solid to good Michigan defense who has elite players up front. I don't think he put a single ball into harm's way. I was thoroughly impressed with the way that he played.
I think it had, until the final touchdown, had a real UCLA vibe to it where you, like, clearly you're watching this game and you go, yeah, I know who the better team is. This isn't a debate. The score isn't even necessarily an indicator, I think, of the difference between these two and where they're at right now. I cannot continue to believe. I'm like almost in disbelief here. I was texting with somebody this weekend and they're a UW fan and they were just like, are you kidding me? Another six-year quarterback that just happens to maybe be better than the last six-year quarterback? It's unbelievable he's getting away with this. And I'm seriously telling you, yeah, he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. There was a question asked to him in the postgame of Michigan basically did not approach any quarterbacks about transferring in the portal. And watching this game, you're kind of like, why? You knew what Alex Orji was more than any of us. We assumed he'd start. You knew he couldn't throw. And then who's your option after that? Davis Warren? Warren Davis? I always get his name backwards. But you know, that ain't beating elite teams.
Yeah.
And Dan Lanning basically said, and he answered for himself because he's not going to answer for Sharon Moore, you have to do the best possible thing that's going to make your team the best possible team. And this is why, even with Dante Moore in, I don't know what Dan Lanning's going to do next year. I think if Dan Lanning feels like he needs to go get the best possible option, he's going to go do it. And damn it if he didn't do it this offseason and getting Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah, the Michigan one is interesting. We had a guy on the pregame show, their color analyst, and I asked him about that. I was like, why was there not something done? And his argument was he basically blamed it on Jim Harbaugh because of how long Harbaugh took to make the decision. So when you go back to December, they actually went hard after Dante Moore because he's a Michigan kid. He's a Detroit kid. They thought, hey, come on home, come back to the state, be close to your family and friends, play in the Big Ten. But at the time they were trying to go after him, you didn't know if Jim Harbaugh was going to be. We all assumed he was going to be gone, but we didn't know that for certain. He was, you know, was fishing for NFL jobs, and then he finally landed one. I don't think he ended up leaving Michigan until like December or January 25th or something like that, because he had to obviously wait for the end of the national title game, and then it took a couple of weeks after that in order for him to leave. And so it just convoluted. That was their argument.
January.
Yeah, it convoluted our timeline. And at that point, you're trying to convince a guy, let's just use Dante Moore as an example. I'm sure they tried others. The question as a recruit is, who's going to be the head coach?
Hmm.
And at that time, you can't answer that. Dante Moore committed to Oregon at the middle to late December, if I'm not mistaken, before they even played in their bowl game. So that made it very tough for them. I actually was impressed with the way Davis Warren played in this game. But
he had a good game.
Like,
yes,
considering my expectations going in and how little I thought of Michigan's passing attack, like, their two touchdown passes in this game, it wasn't like guys were running wide open. The first one was him kind of rolling for his life out to the right sideline, threw it back across his body. Nico Reed had great coverage. And then the one in the third quarter, he was kind of floating to the left, drifting, just kind of lobbed a ball up, and they were able to make a play. Both of them were good defense and better plays. But I think that just puts you in a tough spot. It's similar to kind of where Washington would have been had they not already had the commitment from Will Rogers. Like, who would their quarterback have been? It would have been a freshman, but they had already had a commitment on the table who decided to remain committed.
Gabriel is first in the country in completion percentage. He's sixth in yards. He's 13th in, or no, he's 8th in yards per attempt. He's 13th in touchdown passes. And with interceptions, that one, because he's had a couple, he's in the...
I think he's got 5 picks on the year, if I'm not mistaken.
And he's got 5. So there's a ton of guys with like 3 and 4. So yeah, he's down there a little bit. Anyways, my point is, I think with that game, Oregon remaining number one, they're going to house Maryland this weekend. I think they're going to beat Wisconsin, even though that could be potentially a big nooner. So
could
that's,
be.
You know, time change, all that. I just don't look at Oregon's schedule, and I've been saying this, and I'm going to keep saying it. I don't see a loss there. And so the number one team in the country with the highest completion percentage and a top 10 statistical quarterback, he's at least getting the invite to New York.
Without a doubt.
I did a poll question on this, and I'm not shocked by that. Duck fan probably voted on it. But who would you bet on to win the Heisman? And interesting, Hunter and Ward were the two least picked guys, but I think they are the number one and two picks for the Heisman right now.
If I had to bet on it with my own money, not who I would vote for, but who, yes, if I had to, I would bet on Dylan Gabriel.
You
right
really
now.
Would?
I would, yeah.
Because it still feels like, despite how good his game was, he's still not quite getting the Ward Hunter stuff.
Well, the tough part is the best play they had in the passing game was overturned. Evan Stewart made maybe the greatest catch in the history of Oregon football, and it was overturned by an illegal lineman downfield. So that was a bit of a frustration.
How close was that lineman downfield? I didn't see the replay on it.
He was downfield,
but he was on the total opposite
side. Yeah.
Nothing to do with the play.
Brutal.
Because Gabriel rolled out the other way.
He blocked his guy, and then he just kind of
drifted.
That was such
drifted
a
forward.
It was unbelievable. That catch was unbelievable. That was cool to see. One of the random factoids out of this game that I loved, first year in the conference, the last time a team beat Michigan and Ohio State in the same year in the Big Ten, nobody's done it since 2015. Michigan State was the last one to do it. Michigan and Ohio State in the same year. It's been nearly a decade, and Oregon was able to do it. No, Michigan is not what they've been the last couple of years, clearly. They put up a decent fight. They made it an interesting ball game, but Oregon ends up pulling away. But little stats like that, and also on top of that, with the way that Georgia looked, Oregon still remaining number one. They're also the unanimous number one. Never happened in program history, so it's pretty damn cool.
I think there's a lot on this throughout the week we can talk about with the way Carson Beck is playing. Is Oregon in a tier by themselves? I don't think all Duck fans would say yes to that because history and Georgia defense.
Well, and then the injuries this weekend, too. I mean, you lose a number one wide receiver and a starting lineman, potentially. It's that they got banged up this weekend.
They lost Tez Johnson. They lost Harper on the offensive line. I want to talk a little bit about this. And the third quarter scoring woes. No touchdowns so far in Big Ten play in the third quarter. Dan Lanning was asked twice about this. Is this a problem that's looming for Oregon? A tale of two halves a little bit as they get a blowout win at Michigan. We'll get to that next on The Fan. It's a fun trivia question. Derek Carr has now gotten Dennis Allen fired twice.
Not a fan favorite right now in New Orleans.
Shocked Allen went with Carr because of that first stat.
The Olave family also very angry with Derek Carr right now as well.
If we're going to have all this conversation about Tua,
yeah,
I think Olave's had more.
A lot of them.
That one looked terrifying.
That was horrible.
We're talking Oregon. They get the win in blowout fashion in Ann Arbor, 38-17. the secret score sounder just dropped, and we have to wait for people, I think, to text in. But the stat, the number attached to the secret score was an impressive one. So when Swag tells me we have a winner,
then we'll.
I'll tell you what that number was and what the stat is. But it was impressive nonetheless.
Hmm.
The Duck offense, I don't know if this is a thing. I think you made your position clear. They've been winning in blowout fashion because they've been up big. They have not scored a touchdown in the third quarter in Big Ten play. It is a tale of two halves for them for a few games here. And so I saw some of this noise during the Illinois game. I kind of rolled my eyes. Some people have this concern. Is this a thing? Dan Lanning was asked about this twice. Here was the first question about the third quarter scoring woes.
Yeah, there's a trend, right? And it's something that we're certainly aware of and attacking. You know, again, they came out and got a three and out there, I think, on the very first drive out of the third quarter. So it's something we want to look at and improve on.
And then his last question at the press conference was asked by our buddy Bill Orem, who's going to join us in a half hour at the top of the hour, 8 a.m. for the Daily Ticker, who was at Michigan. He asked again about third quarter woes.
Dan, just to circle back to the third quarter issue trend, is it at a point where you would say that's a problem? Is it on the verge of becoming a problem? How do you characterize it?
No, we won 38-17, so I'd say it's not a problem, right? It's something we want to address, though.
Not a problem. Something we want to address. Is this a deal or no deal?
To me, it's a no deal. In an ideal world, would I want Oregon to score 14 points every third quarter and end these games that are three-score games at halftime earlier so there's no stress late in the fourth quarter and you go to bed earlier? Of course I would. I also chuckle at it a little bit because, again, I will go back to the stat that I used in the last segment. In five of their six Big Ten games, they've had a three-score lead at halftime. But it feels like this is the thing that we're hammering home and we're focusing more on, not the fact that almost every single one of their conference games has been over at halftime. And despite Michigan making a valiant effort in the second half, Oregon outscored them 10-7 in the second half. So it felt like, hey, maybe they're back in the game. They had the drive to try and cut it to a one-score game. They couldn't finish that drive. They called a ridiculously dumb play on fourth down. It's a whole different conversation. Would you like them to score more points in the third quarter? Of course. I also would like to show me the team in college football that is perfect and doesn't have flaws. Show me the team out there that doesn't have a vulnerability or an issue or a thing that they need to clean up. Would I rather deal with my team being up by three scores and then struggling to score in the third quarter or my starting quarterback throwing interceptions left and right to the other team every single week? Like, I understand that we want to hold them to a perfect standard, but that perfect team doesn't exist. Oregon is not a perfect team. I hope that they clean it up at some point, but they did it against Ohio State, and they still found a way to win the game. They led it the half. They got the ball to start the second half. They didn't score. Ohio State scored on their opening drive. If there was a game it was going to doom you, it was that game, and it did not doom them. So something they need to clean up, but no panic for me.
Eric in Oregon City has won the secret score. The number was two. Two penalties the whole game for Oregon.
One of them an illegal man downfield that took away a
sweet-ass catch.
Unbelievable touchdown. Damn it.
You made a note of this, and I want to get to this part, too. Lost their number one receiver. I tend to think Stewart is overall, but I hear what you're saying because of the stats. Tez Johnson left this game with
three plays into it, basically.
A shoulder or collarbone. I don't know if we're going to get details or information because there's no mandate in college football, and
no.
Lanning is like every other big coach where he's not going to tell you.
We still don't even know what happened with Jordan Burch. He was back this week, but we don't know specifically what the injury was.
That's the other thing is Burch and Ferguson were questionable. Then they played, and so there's Harper went down as well. They tend to be a little more positive, at least from the media standpoint on Harper. But we don't know what the result of Tez Johnson's injury is. If it's a broken collarbone,
I mean, I imagine he's done at the very minimum for the rest of the regular season.
It would be my guess. Feel.
You just hope it's not going to be something that's season ending.
Collarbone would be pretty close to season ending, wouldn't it?
I believe so. I mean, it could be a clavicle. It could be an AC joint. Who the hell knows with his shoulder? The way he's in a sling immediately was not great. That's not ideal, and it happened a couple of plays in. But I think it also goes back to how impressed I was with Gabriel and the way that he played. Like, three plays in, you tell me Tez goes down. If you would have told me on Friday Oregon's going to drop a punt inside their own 30-yard line and hand Michigan a short field and an easy touchdown, like, those are things that, hey, maybe they would have rattled a different team and Oregon still was able to win this game by 21 points. I have hammered the depth the last couple of weeks. I think it's been on display. Now it's going to get tested at wide receiver. Evan Stewart and Holden are a good 1-2 combo. Holden had his first ever 100-yard game in any year he's been in college. He didn't do it at Bama. He's never done it at Oregon. First time he's ever had a 100-yard game. Justice Lowe has come on, and that's been a revelation here the last couple of weeks.
Gave him the ball early in the game.
They absolutely did. Who's your number four wide receiver now? Well, that becomes the question.
Okay, that's a fair question to ask, which needs an answer. I kind of wonder aloud, and I don't want to diminish the dude and what he's meant to them at all. I understand Tez Johnson. By the way, do you know Tez Johnson's Bo Nix's adopted brother?
I did not know that.
He matters a great deal. I also have watched Dylan Gabriel now. I think they've spread the ball around. They've brought Lowe on. You mentioned Holden had a big game. I think they got good tight ends. Sadiq had a good performance.
Yeah, Sadiq, wonder, you can split out in a slot. He doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you can line him up anywhere.
I'm actually wondering the thing that cost them 7 points. Is Stewart now your punt returner, and what does that do to special teams? Because Tez quite literally won you the game against Boise State with his special teams play. He is a threat every time, and I don't know if Stewart is. I didn't see any evidence of it.
I think he just called Ferry. After they fumbled the one, it was like, let's just go out there and catch the damn ball and be on offense.
Yeah, I think Pelham's never returning punts the rest
of
the season.
Just go catch it, man.
But that, I think, again, I don't want to diminish what he means on offense, but I think I wonder if that's the bigger deal for them is, have you lost a little something special teams with Tez?
I mean, I think that's the double whammy of it, right? Like, he has more touchdowns out of the slot than anybody in college football this year, and so that's a big hole that you're going to have to plug, but he is also a dynamic punt returner. He had the first punt return of the game. They forced Michigan 3 and out, got the ball right out of the gate, and he had a nice return to set up Oregon with great field position, and they went on to score on that drive. Kyle Kasper is probably the guy that would have filled this void. He is out for the rest of the year. He got hurt in practice earlier this season. And so, now, I mean, you're essentially looking at unproven redshirt freshman or unproven true freshman, and that's where you're going to have to go. Jeremiah McClellan has played well in garbage time duty that he has been given. Ryan Pelham is another true freshman who fumbled the punt. I don't know how you feel about him playing. Jurion Dickey, is he ready for his moment? Redshirt freshman.
Haven't seen him at all. I haven't seen him do
anything. He was banged up, to be fair him last year. He was banged up, and he redshirted, so that wasn't much, but he's a sophomore, so is he ready to come in and play? Can he handle some stuff? Dylan Gresham's a guy that they're high on, but he's a true freshman. Like, I think that Gary Bryant has been out all year. Is he back at some point? He can get a medical redshirt. Would he rather try that route, or would he rather try and play? It's a question mark. I trust Gabriel. I trust the offensive staff. You can run the football. The rest of your opponents are not overly intimidating outside of maybe a 9 a.m. game at Wisconsin. You should be able to handle it. Where you're going to feel something like this is in a Big Ten title game rematch, potentially with Ohio State, or down the road in the playoffs. And you pray that he can come back healthy, not because of what he means to the team, but also just because of what this season means. Like, it's been his dream to play at Oregon, to have it, they beat Ohio State, like, to have a chance to go win a national championship. You just hate to see it taken from him at this moment.
I wish college was mandated to give us, like, minimum he's out 5 games.
Yes, it would be very nice.
An injury IR reports, yeah, like they have in the NFL.
Yes, and hey, this guy's on the IR, so that's a minimum of 4 weeks, and it's a reevaluation. College is moving towards that, but it's like, this is
the
where
more
it's
and more they get in bed with gambling.
They should.
Would you see Sankey said this? He basically sent out a memo that, like, hey, the injury stuff is becoming a bit of a problem.
Well, he was mad at the fake injuries during games.
I know, but it's still part of the conversation.
The SEC mandates, I think, injury reports. I think they're the only conference that does it, and they make all their teams do
it. Well, there's an availability report Saturday mornings before the game for the Big
game
10.
Yeah.
But in between.
That needs to be on Thursday.
Yeah. Or Wednesday when you're locking in bets. It'd be nice to know who the hell. It does sound like Marcus Harper's going to be okay. I'd be surprised. Maybe give him the week off this week. You're playing Maryland. But it sounds, he was walking around in the locker room after the game. He's landing set after the game. He should be fine. So that's good.
I don't think it necessarily dictates going forward some of what we're talking about with Tez out. But man, if there's a weekend to see who a person can be, Maryland is coming to get their asses handed to them.
Yes.
They are going to get destroyed by Oregon. So if there's are you going Dickey? Are you going Pelham? Who is it? How do you do with Sadiq? Is he flanked out? If there's a weekend for it to try to figure out, or feel confident about it, it's this weekend.
Last thing, because I know we're going to move on. Yeah. I wanted to not miss this point. You know how I feel about Dan Lanning and how I've always felt about Dan Lanning. There's little moments in games that make the love affair grow even more. There was a moment that isn't going to get a lot of credit or attention out of this game, where it was on the drive that Oregon ended up scoring in the third quarter. It was 28-17, and they ended up kicking a field goal on that drive. Throwing a funky punt formation at Michigan to confuse them and give them a look that they have never seen that led to a nose tackle lining up over the long snapper and getting an automatic first down. And then also on that drive, using tempo like you haven't used the entire game, where you run a play to your sideline, immediately sprint up to the ball, knowing that's a situation that Michigan always substitutes. And they ran three guys on the field and they had like 14 guys on the field at the snap. There's little things like that throughout the course of the game where you're just stealing a first down or you're stealing a free 5 yards that I absolutely love.
I don't want to linger, but now that you brought it up, I did put that on my show sheet. That is certainly a credit to Lanning. And I mean, I don't mean this to take anything away from him. I walk away going, Sherrone Moore, a coach?
How did he not call a timeout? But at the bare minimum, you're making them call a timeout in that situation.
You're also a coach. You should know if a guy lines up over a center on a punt.
It's a 5 yard penalty, illegal formation.
There was one lineman. It was the center. What are you doing? And also their fourth down call, their third and fourth down calls.
Yeah. Quarterback run and then a
just
throwback.
God awful. What are you doing?
Yep.
Oregon rolls. They remain number one, the unanimous number one team in the AP poll. We got the college football playoff poll coming out tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow night,
yeah,
we get
right.
It. Tomorrow night, first time.
That's the only thing tomorrow that's of significance. That and the NFL trade deadline. There's nothing else in the world happening.
Nope.
Nothing at all.
Nothing going on.
On Tuesday, November 5th. We have a lot more college football to get into. Some more NFL as well. The Blazers played two games over the weekend.
They did.
We'll talk about that a little bit. I've about had it with one of these things, and we're only like five games into the season. So we got all that to get to.
All right, welcome back in. 7:38. We'll talk to Bill Orme coming up top of the hour. Get to a couple of Blazer games. The podcast listener who is angry with me for being such a negative Nancy on the Blazers chimed back in again.
Uh-huh.
Said, I'm starting to lean on dirt side. Blazers can't tank properly. They're too cheap to fire Chauncey. Are they really committed to the tank? I love it, dude. I love it.
What a
Which
turn.
They lost two games this weekend. Yeah. So, in my face from what I was complaining about on Friday. But we'll get to them at some point in the final hour of the show.
By the way, solid television time for Dusty Hara this weekend.
Oh, he's all over the screen, dude.
A ton.
All over the screen.
That's Stewart drop, no drop.
Hey, right there.
I'm going to give you a hot take.
Huh?
I think the ball bounced off his arm, not the ground. I've watched this like 80 times.
Should have been reviewed at the very least.
I agree with
it
that.
It also was,
yes.
In my opinion, a blatant defensive pass interference that went uncalled. So it's kind of like, what do you get? You know, should have been first and goal at the one.
But
whether it was
solid,
a catch or not.
Dusty slow-mo just staring at the play with his glasses on the sideline.
Well, you brought up the point about Sherrone Moore, too, in the last segment. A listener reminding us as well. How about his challenge of a call
on the
Loveland catch of like, that's not.
Complete the catch. What are you doing?
That, we know the rule. Like, you can argue it should have been a catch or whatever. Like, that wasn't a catch, and why would you review that? Anyways, I asked a poll question last night. I'm wondering where you guys go on this. A lot of storylines in the world of college football this weekend.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite full chaos, but we had, A&M went down, Iowa State went down, Clemson went down, so you had a little bit of it.
Miami was scared.
Georgia was scared.
Boy, Georgia should be scared.
Who had the worst weekend? Now, you could find somebody who had a worse weekend than one of these. That's fine. Of these four candidates, who had the worst weekend in your mind? You're a fan of this team, and you just are... I'm done. I'm beat down. Can't handle it. Penn State, Clemson, USC, or Nebraska?
Nebraska getting housed at home by
UCLA.
Garbage UCLA, who by all the metrics is just not good offensively and was out, 27-7 on that game?
I mean, Nebraska had like 2 yards of offense at the end of the first
quarter. And Raiola got hurt, by the way.
Yes, he was limping off the field at the end of the game. There's a stat out there. Get this real quick before the last time Nebraska won a home game in November was 4 years ago against Penn State in 2020.
Is that Mike Riley?
The last time they won, I believe it was, the last time they won a November game with fans in attendance, because that was COVID. There weren't fans there.
Oh, touche.
Last time they won a November game with fans in attendance was 2018 against Michigan State. They have not won a game in the month of November with fans in the stands in 6 years.
Also, was that Riley?
18 definitely was.
So the last time they went bowling, the last time they won a game at home, but there were no fans, and then a game at...
Let me see what his last
year
was.
That's just crazy. Like, all these things that they're just begging for.
I know.
Mike Riley gave them, but they,
No, in my face, it was not. So 2018 must have been Frost's first year. He was fired in 2017, Riley was.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me these four.
Those are the options.
Wow. There is somebody that's had a... I mean, I'm sure you can find somebody. Like the
coach. Thought A&M had a worse weekend.
What about Clemson?
Yeah. Clemson was in there.
Second game.
I mean, Clemson was in that the worst weekend.
He went A&M.
A&M's still alive in the SEC title race. And
I'm going to give you one, okay?
Yeah.
The right answer to this is Clemson,
because Clemson was steamrolling garbage.
Garbage.
Yes. And we were pretending that they were beating top 30 teams every week. No, I'm not. This isn't a shot at you.
I mean, it is. I was believing in the Clemson hype train.
Miami's defense sucks. It's going to leave them vulnerable all year no matter what happens.
Is SMU going to win the ACC?
Louisville has never beaten Clemson. This was the first time ever. Not just at Clemson.
Wait, what?
Yes, I looked it up.
They've never beaten Clemson?
According to Bill Conley,
what?
And according to my Google search, that was the first win for Louisville over Clemson.
Holy hell.
And it was on the road.
Holy, and it was, the final score is misleading about how I found how that game went.
So the answer here is Clemson, because now Clemson's sitting in are we even going to make the ACC championship game in what is not a great conference?
You're not wrong. They were 8-0 going into the game. That's wild. I did not know that.
But I'm going to give you one off the board quickly, because it is Clemson. I'm honestly shaking in my boots today if I'm Georgia. Georgia's defense is national championship worthy. Georgia's coach is national championship winner. Their quarterback, I don't believe, can win the national championship. I will sit here and I will eat that crow if they win the title. That dude, how does that dude win all those playoff games? They should have lost to Florida. He couldn't stop throwing to the other team. He looks fragile. He looks unconfident. Kirby's yelling at him after the third pick. He doesn't even make eye contact.
He should have thrown four.
I could be way wrong on this, and college football's wacky this year. I don't know how that dude wins a title. He throws it to the other team at least twice a week.
You can argue he cost them the Bama game with the way he played in the first half, and he should have cost them the title. He was terrible against Texas, but Texas kept giving the ball right back to Georgia in short fields. And
their defense and run game won them that game, not Carson Beck. So, and I wouldn't argue. He did lose them the Alabama game. He was god-awful in that first half.
First half, he was terrible.
It's Clemson, but I'd make an argument for Georgia because their quarterback looks bad.
I mean, you can also argue that if DJ Lagway doesn't go down in that game for Florida, that there's a world where we're doing a show today and Florida beat Georgia this weekend, which imagine saying that on Friday. That's the beauty of the sport. And that's why I go back to that, you know, the thoughts on Oregon in the third quarter. I'm like, it could be worse. You're still winning these games by three scores. It could be worse. A lot of these teams have flaws near the top. I got some other fun factoids I want to give you out of the world of college football. I had an attaboy to this coach who did something this weekend. A little bit under the radar. Some of the other teams that got wins. Lincoln Riley is at it again. He's going to say this every single week, and I'm going to love every single second of it. Some more college football tidbits. That's next on The Fam.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. We'll get to Bill Orme coming up top of the hour. He will be your daily ticker today on a Monday. A couple of basketball thoughts. The college hoops season begins today.
It does, dude. We got some Capture the Flag.
Producer is excited. Everybody's just getting all jacked up, so we'll carve out a few minutes on a football Monday.
We got to build all the pilots imaging here, and then Portland gets going Wednesday night.
International Beeves starting tonight.
That's
right.
Here's the situation.
It is that time of year, ladies and gentlemen. It is that time of year. I want to get to a couple of more tidbits out of the college football world. So we were talking about Clemson there, and we just should collectively make fun of Dabo Sweeney for a moment. Did you see what he did? They were down 26-7 in the fourth quarter. And they scored a touchdown, okay? So that would make the score what? Before the PAT.
12? They had 12?
It was 26-13. So that before the PAT. So they were. If you line up to kick the PAT, it makes it 12. But initially, they're down by 13.
Okay.
Is it more advantageous in the fourth quarter to be down by 13 or down by 11?
By 11.
Right? Because you could score a touchdown and get a two-point conversion and then kick a field goal. Does a 12-point deficit do anything for you? Or is it still a two-touchdown game?
Still two-touchdown game.
You know what Dabo Sweeney did after they scored that touchdown?
Kick the extra point.
Kick the extra point.
There you go.
And the announcers, rightfully so, Bob Wischusen, I think, was on the call that game and was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What is going down 12 have to do with it? Is nobody there? Have a brain? Do you think about things?
Maybe players in the portal could have helped you not lose this game and
just wild
with Georgia a little more.
Absolutely wild. I saw that. Wanted to make sure we called that out.
I don't disagree with a whole lot of your dirty poll. This is the one team, and they could still maybe find their way into the ACC title game. this is the one that I'm just like, what about him and that program builds any trust? I've been noting they've beaten nothing but Pat. I was so happy watching them lose this game.
They
and
got
get
bit,
blown
yeah.
out.
They got blown out.
Yeah.
I think the counter to that would be, do you believe in anybody in the ACC?
Miami.
You do believe
Miami's
in Miami.
Defense is not good. I'll certainly lend you that. But like they were down 28-17 after being up 14-0, by the way.
Yes, they were.
And I still was like, yeah.
That
I mean, they're going to score a ton.
That offense can crank it up.
Cam Ward is
they can. Have they played a defense with a pulse, that would be my other response.
Who are they going to play in this conference
Nobody.
With a pulse?
Nobody.
So that's kind of the scenario of, like, do you trust? I trust the team with the best offense, and I think there's
they
a
unquestionably
shot
have
Heisman.
The best. They unquestionably have the best offense. Up in Seattle on Saturday night, it was two teams trading off who wants to lose this game more.
Good Lord.
Jed Fish coming out of a timeout needing 1 yard to win the game. 1 yard. You had all that time to talk about your play call. Jed Fish, okay, we got third and one. One first down, the game's over. 1 yard, the game's over. He took the field with 12 guys.
Let's put an extra guy out there.
They made it third and six.
How do you do that out of a timeout?
And then punted them. I had to punt the ball back to USC, which gave them an opportunity to win. Lincoln Riley gets inside the 5 yard line or 10 yard line twice, comes away with no points in the fourth quarter.
My family was like, are you going to come watch this movie? And I literally was like, I'm watching a comedy right now.
This is great. This is great.
They had just been called for the 12 man penalty out of a timeout.
I started laughing watching that game, and the wife turned to me and she was like, what are you laughing about? Why is this so funny? And I was like, let me explain it to you, honey. Here's the situation. And then I think she also got a good chuckle. After the game, though, USC, man, like Oof. Five games away from being undefeated.
Honestly, like, not that much. I mean, what's different is, you know, a handful of plays throughout the season and a bunch of games, kind of like the LSU game, that have come down right to the end. And we've just had we've kind of had the anomaly of a year. You know, normally, you know, these things end up over time going about 50-50 on these games that come down to one play. And we've happened to have the year that you know, not too many of them have went our way. And so I think the biggest thing you look at is we've been a good enough team. I know I've said it, but it's still the truth. Like, it's just as true as it was, you know, last week against Rutgers and the wins and the losses and everything. We've been a good enough team to win every game. We've been a good enough team to put ourselves in position to win, but we haven't separated consistently, and we've consistently been in these games that come down to one play, and we just have not done a good enough job making those plays. So, I mean, obviously you want to continue to get better in the end and finish these off, which we certainly need to do a better job. We own that, but, you know, the biggest key for us growing both this year and in the future is when you get the ability or the opportunity, I should say, to separate in these games, that's what you got to do. And then it doesn't come down to a coin flip or hoping you make a play or they don't, or this call goes your way or that one doesn't. And that's just kind of been the story of this stretch for us.
And just nine plays away from being undefeated this year at USC. A fun fact for you that Lincoln Riley in the last 41 days has lost as many games as Dan Lanning has in his Oregon tenure.
It's certainly not going well. I didn't vote for USC on your poll question because I
kind of knew
this is who they've been. Yeah. We all picked Washington to win this game.
I did not. I took USC to win the game.
Oh, did you?
I did, yeah. Oh. And they were inside the 10-yard line twice, and they probably should have won, but I digress.
Oh, I think they had a crazy stat in this game of, like, their red zone visits
so bad,
versus,
dude,
like, what they ended up doing in this game. I was trying to find the number.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Look, I'm not shocked that they lost this game. This is USC. They look like they had full momentum of this game. They took the lead.
After a terrible first half, they came out like a cannon in the third quarter.
And then they went three and out. Yeah. And Washington got the ball, and Washington went down and scored. Miller Moss was terrible in this football game. He threw some dimes.
He's not been good on the road.
No. Well, they haven't won a game on the road.
No.
That's the thing with USC. They're 4-5 now in conference play. I think people about had it with this whole, like, we're 5 or 6 plays away. He's literally gave this answer, like, for 4 straight weeks.
This is him all last year, too. We're just losing close games.
I got a take for you. I want to call out his fourth down near the goal line play. That's what you call?
They got blown up in the
background,
in the backfield. Yeah,
I have some creativity, my man. And I couldn't believe how bad that was. I don't think he's going to stay. I don't think he wants to get fired. I wouldn't be shocked if he was the Saints guy or fill in the blank NFL team next year.
If you were an NFL team, would you be? I mean, is it a recruiting problem? Is it a culture thing?
Like, I think you're still
willing to give him a job?
I certainly hear why you wouldn't hire him in the NFL. I'm not even telling you he's the best name and candidate. I think we can argue, or maybe we don't. He at least knows offense. So in the NFL, I don't need you to recruit. Go get a D coordinator, and you can certainly laugh at that notion. I don't know where this is going. They should have won this game. Washington did everything they could to lose this game. Rodgers was terrible in this.
He was really bad.
They had a 12-man penalty out of a timeout.
In the biggest moment of the game.
The weather was in Washington's favor. Washington did everything they could to lose this game. And they lost.
That was such
I will be shocked if he hangs around, because where is this going? Are they going to be 8-4 next year? Is that the upside of what next year could be?
Right, and is that a good year in year four for you?
Like, who's their quarterback?
Miller Moss will be back for another year.
Will he? Why would you play him?
I don't know.
And your defense is, like, Anton Lynn is, I guess, better than Alex Grinch. They weren't necessarily the problem, but it's not good enough. This is terrible.
They might miss the bowl game. They need a win over likely UCLA. I mean, they're two wins away.
They'll beat UCLA, I think.
They should beat Nebraska, but Nebraska's also weird where they nearly beat Ohio State and then lose to UCLA.
That's a home game for USC, right?
It is a home game.
So
it is in LA.
USC wins that game.
They both have a bye, I believe, this week. I'm not sure. I know USC does. So they need to win two of their last three just to get to a bowl game in year three under Lincoln Riley. That's bananas. Before we wrap up here, we go to Bill Orme. I just want to give a shout out to one guy.
Yeah.
Man, this is remarkable.
He's got a dog mentality.
In year two under Kenny Dillingham, the Arizona State Sun Devils are bowl eligible. And on that note, did you know that by becoming bowl eligible, he became the first coach born in the 1990s to lead a team to a bowl game?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, how many other? I mean, he's 30. How old is Dillingham? 34?
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was 32 or 33.
Lanning's. No, he's like 33, 34.
Lanning, I think, is my
Lanning's
age or
my
a year
age.
Old or your age. He's like 37.
So he's a late 80s guy.
He's a late 80s. Wow. He was born in 1990s. First coach ever born in the 90s to lead a team to a bowl game. And in their in state rivalry, who they get at the end of the year.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about a one and done potentially?
I mean, Arizona is just a dumpster, and Arizona State's going to a bowl game. That's really cool. I know we weren't sure how's this going to work out. ASU, they're coming off Herm Edwards. Awesome job by them this year to get to a bowl game.
Scatabo needs recognition of he has been one of the more awesome college football players this year.
Yes, he has.
He's been a great story for them. I'm happy for Kenny Dillingham. He got his dream job. They're going bowling in year two. They were picked Finch last in that conference. It's a fantastic story. Brent Brennan might not be long for that Arizona job.
Ooh, buddy.
I can't explain what they are now.
Ooh, buddy. All right, we got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. A couple of basketball tidbits, a few NFL leftovers we haven't got to yet. Let's start with Bill Orme, though, columnist at the Oregonian. He was in Ann Arbor this weekend. What does he make of Oregon, the rest of the college football landscape, the Blazers, all of it? Bill Orme kicks off the final hour next on 1080 The Fam.